Om Shri Sai Ram, I offer my most humble pranams at the divine lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan, and I offer my sincere prayer to Swami to guide every word that I speak today. My fondest and earliest recollection of Radio Sai goes back to the inaugural ceremony in 2001. I was a student of the Anantapur campus at that point, and we were in Puttaparthi in Kulwant Hall for the birthday celebrations. And here was this announcement of a wondrous new method, a communication channel to get Swami's message across to thousands of people worldwide on a daily basis in the form of bhajans and Bhagwan's discourses. I was enthralled by the idea that from a little hamlet in the middle of Andhra Pradesh, there could be something broadcast to the entire world without them having to move an inch. And here I am today, being given an opportunity to share some of my experiences with the Divine Lord on this very platform. When I was invited to speak, many a thought came to mind as to where should I begin? What should I share? I have often found that when one speaks from a space of having gone through something personally with Bhagwan, narrating that comes very easily because it's almost like recollecting a story in one's memory and reliving those moments with him. I had a sudden thought this afternoon. You know, when we talk about God in his various avatars, Krishna when he gave the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, or Prophet Muhammad having received the Quran from the voice of Allah. And we're all so much in awe of these beings who were chosen to receive the message of God straight from the source. And then it struck me, in the Kali Yuga, tens of thousands of devotees of Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba have, without apparently asking for it, been chosen to become the Arjunas and Prophet Muhammad's just by having been in his presence. For we who have had the fortune of being his students in his own campus, the blessings were manifold. I don't think it even sunk in at that point in time. We were just so enthralled with being in Swami's presence, the wonderful orange robe, the beautiful crown of hair, that lithe way in which he would walk down the carpet. That is what was our main point of focus, singing bhajans in his presence. All of that is what connected us. But if you really, really think about it, how fortunate have we been to listen to the voice of God straight from the source on so many occasions. The question then arises, we read all these scriptures in the hope of being able to understand something from it, emulate it, use it in our daily lives, and make our existence more meaningful. But here was a Lord, a living, breathing, beautiful Lord, on a daily basis was giving us small little trinkets of wisdom. And if we still go searching in other scriptures for what path our life should take, then I think we've sort of missed the whole point of having been in his presence. So keeping that in mind, I wanted to reflect on some of the messages that Swami had given me without my realizing that that was what that experience was at that point in time. So I want to tie the experience to the teaching and how it is very applicable even to this day and probably for years to come. So one of the teachings that Swami often used to speak about is Manava Seva is Madhava Seva. Service to man is service to God. And the biggest pitfall in all of these easy little phrases that Swami used to give us is that we didn't understand the actual depth of meaning behind it. In 2000 November, I was in my second year of college at Anandpur, and that was the 75th year of the advent of the Sai Avatar. Very, very special year, I'm sure. There are millions of devotees across the world who have many fond recollections from that period. We as students had been given a very, very unique chance to truly understand this dictum, Manava Seva is Madhava Seva. Because Bhagwan had initiated in a very real and large scale the concept of Gram Seva. And yes, students of both the gents and the ladies campus were involved in their own little roles of being a part of that entire opportunity. While the boys would go for distributing the prasadam to the various villages in the vicinity, the girls used to be a part of preparing the prasadam, packaging it, working through the night in order for it to be easy to transport to the destination. Around the time that the Gram Seva was almost reaching its conclusion, it was spread out for close to a month, I would say, or 3 weeks or more. There was a little desire that all of us had had as in the girls' campus that would Bhagwan give us the opportunity not just to pack prasadam, but also to go and distribute. As good fortune would have it, Swami allowed us the chance to go and distribute prasadam. But more than that, it is what preceded that opportunity that is what I'm about to share now. Swami called the entire Anandpur campus of girls that year into his mandir for an interview. And still very fondly remember, Swami called us in and then he went and locked the door to the mandir. And he sat among us. He didn't sit and stand at a distance. He actually had his chair brought closer to us and he sat on the chair. And he asked us to come a little closer. And Swami said, you know why I've called you? All of you wanted an opportunity to be a part of the Gram Seva by going and distributing the food parcels. But I want you to understand what this actually means. What is Seva? So we were, of course, very happy to be in Swami's presence. We weren't really prepared for what the entire set of instructions, like an instruction manual that Swami had prepared to pass on to us. So the first thing Swami said is, okay, when you reach there, how will you begin your whole seva? We didn't know what the correct answer was. We said, Swami, we will get down from the vehicle and then we will get into lines. He said, all that is fine. You have to make people understand that you have come from Prashanti Nilayam. So how will they know? So we're still blank. And then Swami said, can you sing bhajans? And immediately some of us enthusiastically just started off, because we were so overwhelmed that Swami's right there, this is an opportunity to sing. So we said, we started off, Uma, Uma. Swami said, no, no, stop. I'm saying bhajan, not song. He said, what is bhajan? Bhajan is when other people can also join in along with you. That is bhajan. So then we started with, okay, Swami, we'll sing. And then he said, Manasa bhajare guru charanam. Swami said, very nice, but don't sing that. Swami, this is the bhajan that you started this entire tradition with. He said, no, this is not about announcing my presence there. It is about making them feel as a part of you and for you to be a part of them. And Swami went on to say, the village that you're going to be visiting, there will be a lot of people from the Islamic brethren who will be there. And In order to be able to connect with them, you should sing something which will make them feel a part of your experience. So the best thing to do is sing Sarvadharma bhajans. So pick as many Sarvadharma bhajans as you need. In between, you can sing Baba bhajans also, but sing a lot of Sarvadharma bhajans. So that way you will be very well introduced into their way of living. And Swami said, as you're singing, you should walk. Keep a disciplined passage as you are going through. Remember that you are guests in their home, so you should not walk here and there without any permission from your teachers. Stick to your group and walk together. And the next part of it, so there was many things that Swami mentioned to us during this. The other bit that brought out the whole service aspect was, Swami said, when you reach a household, how will you offer the prasadam to them? How will you give the packet? So many of us dared to offer certain suggestions, saying that, Swami, we will go up to their door and we will knock on it and then we will hand over the parcel. Swami said, no, not that way. Remember that this is seva. We are not giving alms to beggars. And we should not go and disturb them by knocking on the door. You will maintain a respectful distance from the door. Put your hands together and in a slightly audible voice say Sai Ram. And if as a group all of you say Sai Ram, anybody who's inside will hear you and they will come out. And the next thing you will say is, do not say to them that I have come to give you food. Because who are you to give them food? Instead, if you say, Swami has sent prasadam for you through us. If you would accept it, we would be very happy. Offer it as a gift from me and everybody will gladly accept. And then Swami again said, one more thing about this whole experience is, seva should flow without any limits. It should be limitless. Ask them how many people are there in the household. And most people will only give you the count of the adults who are there. Tell them specifically, please tell us the number of children in the house, even if they are infants, even if they are, you know, babies, please mention, and give them those many packets. All of you will immediately think, I know what you will think. Swami said, small babies, how will they eat puliyogare and laddu? Won't it go waste? It is not your concern whether the food is going to be wasted or it's going to be given away to somebody else. You are only going to give the prasadam. How it is handled after that is not your concern. So give without any feeling of limitation. So there were many other things Swami told us in that interview. But these specific aspects, when we say Manava Seva is Madhava Seva, in order to be truly of service to God, one must allow His dictum to flow through us in the form of action. The minute we think that I am doing service, we've actually lost the plot. So this was one thing that very clearly came from him as an instruction on what does this particular teaching mean. There were, of course, many other opportunities that one has had to be a part of seva opportunities, but this particular incident will always stay with me, because if I am ever tempted to feel that I have done something great by being given an opportunity to serve, then a quick recollection of this particular interview with Swami sets the mind straight very quickly, because in order to even get an opportunity to serve, one has to have His grace. And that is something I would like to keep reminding myself. Another incident that comes to mind, and which is again tied to a different teaching. So this was one particular teaching. This other teaching is, this is something I used to read in, they have these thought for the day calendars, which would have excerpts from Swami's discourses. A lot of it obviously is an English translation of Swami's words in Telugu, but they capture the sort of essence of what Swami is trying to tell us. One such thought which had caught my attention: you must welcome tests because it gives you confidence and it ensures promotion. Now, in a very either academic or professional sense, all of this makes, seems to be intelligent a statement. If you have a test and you pass it, then you get a promotion. But obviously, Swami is not talking about that. So what does he mean when he says welcome test and it ensures promotion? What promotion are we talking about? So in 2005, before that, let me get back to 1999, correct. In 1999, I had just joined the Anandapur campus for my first year of study. And hardly 2 weeks into my stay at the campus, on one particular day, as I was getting ready to go to college, there was a sudden searing pain in my abdomen. And I actually crumpled and fell to the floor. I wasn't able to move. This was still in the hostel. I hadn't quite reached the gates of the hostel. And I didn't know what was happening. I was in untold pain. And obviously, I mean, there were other people who came to my aid and they tried to, alleviate the symptoms. Nothing was working. And I was taken to a nearby hospital. They weren't really able to make out very clearly because they didn't have too many good facilities at that point in time. So my parents were contacted and they quickly rushed later that night. They had to drive from Bangalore to Anandapur. And the symptoms weren't getting any better. And the doctors at the Anandapur hospital said, it looks like there might be some surgery required. So it's better that you take her back to Bangalore. It is going to be dangerous to take her on the road and go, but there is no other option as of now. It's better you drive back. My father was never comfortable driving at night, so we had to wait out the night. And the next morning, we started early back to Bangalore. And all through the return journey, it was the pain didn't abate. We just kept trying to sing bhajans to keep one's focus on positive energy. When we reached Bangalore and we went to a hospital that we had sort of had a connection with for quite some time, we had known some doctors there, and they admitted me immediately and they said, symptomatically it looks like appendicitis and it looks like a very severe case of it, and surgery might be required immediately, but we'll need to do a scan first. So already I was in pain, and the last thing I needed was to sort of have it prolonged further. Now, anybody who's had an ultrasound scan will know that there is this, they'll have to drink water and then you'll have to wait and then you'll have to go for the scan and allow for all the testing to be done. So they prepped me, they got me ready, drink the water and wait outside. And as I sat there waiting with the pain increasing by every second, I suddenly see the technician coming out and saying, the main technician who has to do your scan has gone for a lunch break and has also said there's an emergency because of which she won't be able to come for the next 1 hour. But because we can't keep you waiting for too long, You just keep waiting here. We'll try and organize for an alternative. So this test that I was going through didn't seem to be getting any better. And as I kept waiting and I kept waiting, after about 15 minutes, another doctor came and said, we're now ready for the scan, but unfortunately something seems to have gone wrong with the machine. It's broken down. But we still would recommend that you wait here and don't go back to the ward because it might be dangerous for you to move around too much. So while this was painful on one side, it was beginning to become painfully comic on the other side, that there is this constant testing that's happening to see how much of patience I have and how much of perseverance I have in holding on and waiting for the result to sort of present itself. After about 45 minutes of this drama, when I finally went in for the scan, the doctor says, the abdomen is very distended. We will need you to sort of go for a round and come back so that it drain the fluid drains a little bit. So at this point, the last thing one has in one's mind is prayer, because we're just in so much of pain. But my mother was next to me, and she had this that thought written down. Welcome tests, for they ensure promotion. And she said, this is a test from Swami, so don't resist. Just accept it and it will be fine. Soon after that, they managed to finish the scan. They did find out it was a very inflamed appendix, and they had to immediately operate. But the beauty of it, all the pain I had undergone was very minuscule in comparison to what the surgeon said after the operation. He said, it is very, very strange. It was so highly inflamed and so expanded in size that we've not seen something like this in a very long time. And it could have ruptured and caused internal hemorrhaging if we had left it even for a day longer. But somehow nothing happened on the inside. We were able to quickly finish the surgery, a lot quicker than we had thought we would be able to. And she will be back on her feet within the next 2-3 days. So something of a much larger magnitude had been averted, because one had to accept that the smaller tests would slowly get you past what you are not yet aware of. Especially when we are in testing times, when we are in a space where we are wondering, why me? We often forget the bigger picture, that nothing happens without His design, without His plan. If there was indeed that pain that needed to be gone through, He allows you to even experience that pain in a more manageable circumstance, rather than having to be pushed beyond the limit. So it ensures promotion in the sense, if you embrace pain and if you embrace tests wholeheartedly, Swami makes it a point to hold your hand and ensure that you get past it unscathed. But the faith has to be intact at that point. So this was another beautiful way of understanding what that dictum meant. Because every single word that has come out of Bhagwan's mouth is actually a pearl of wisdom, which I think ruminating on that itself is meditation. Living it on a daily basis is indeed walking the path that He has set for us. While bhajan and prayer and satsang and everything else is an opportunity for a short amount of time to be singing His praises, if we truly, truly absorb what it is that Swami has given us and live it on a daily basis, we've probably started the journey towards understanding the purpose of this existence. So this brings to mind another set of words that Swami had spoken. And this was also in one of the discourses when I was a student, but I'd also read the translation a little later on. I'll read it out. So the translation goes like this: no religion has a separate God showering grace only on those who profess to abide by that faith. It sounds like a very generic statement that one would say about all religions are one, all faiths are one, there are no two gods, everything is one. And it sounds nice to read about it, to listen to it. But when you truly experience it is when you understand the beauty of it. So this again is another health-related experience, but in terms of the setting, it boggles my mind to recall it even today. Somewhere around mid-2000s, right, around 2006 or 7, there was one more occasion of this kind where I suddenly took ill. And around that time, this was all in Bangalore. We were staying in Bangalore, and my father has been serving in Swami's hospital since Whitefield Hospital since its inception. And we were staying on the Whitefield campus in the quarters. At this point in time, the super specialty hospital is like where it is right now, but the general hospital was still not a part of this campus. It was in its original space in the Whitefield area, where they did all the general specialties, right? All general surgery, obstetrics, and so on. So there was development of certain symptoms. One day when I'd come back from work, I had started working at a school about a year prior to that, and was again in a very, very bad condition. And when I came back home, I just wasn't able to sit up straight. The pain in the lower abdomen was getting increasingly difficult to handle. So my parents said, let's just go to the Whitefield General Hospital and we will see if there is anybody who can guide us as to what should be done, what should the possible treatment be, and so on. And when we reached there, somebody said, it looks like there might be, you know, a gynecologist who might have to take a look at this. But then somebody else said, maybe it's good for a general surgeon to look at it. It went back and forth because they were not very sure symptomatically what was the issue. Then finally, as I was sitting and waiting in the corridor and not really able to express what was happening, one of the surgeons who was serving at the Whitefield Hospital at the time, he happened to pass me by and he said, what happened? You're looking like you're in a lot of pain. I said, yes, I'm not able to sit and I really don't know what to do. So he said, you come inside. I'll quickly check to see, is there something that we can do here? Or maybe, you know, if you need to go elsewhere for treatment, then we will look at that. So again, he checked very quickly and he said, this looks like something that might need surgical intervention, but I don't think the surgery should be done here. I have a contact in a hospital in the city and I will put you on to them. But at the earliest, this evening itself, go to the hospital and get yourself admitted. So we went back home to quickly pack a bag. Contacted the hospital, spoke to the doctor whom we had been connected to, and he said, come right away. It's as it is a longish drive, it will take you an hour or so to reach here. I'll be waiting and we'll get the procedure started, as in hospitalization and then checking to see what the next steps need to be and so on. So as we were quickly getting ready and we were about to leave, at that point in time, there was a slightly older person or a lady who used to visit various households to help them out with, you know, cleaning vessels or cutting vegetables. Whoever needed some help, she would actually offer her services. It wasn't that she was employed in any one house, but she would visit different households. She was very, very fond of my mother and a lady of Christian faith. And she happened to come home around the time that we were about to leave for the city hospital. And she took one look at me and she said, you don't look well, but don't worry. Jesus Christ will protect you. So at the point in time that you are under testing circumstances, under a lot of pain, you're not going to be analyzing what the other person is saying. And somebody is giving you a blessing, you just say thank you and then you move on. And then she stopped me again. She said, don't be afraid. Jesus Christ will save you. Everything will be fine. And then she said, I will sit outside your door and pray for you that all should be well. So again, we just felt grateful that there was somebody who was praying for us and we made our journey to the hospital. When I reached there, I wasn't really able to stand up. So I was put into a wheelchair and I was being wheeled around to the, you know, first to the reception and then to the waiting area. And then they finally said, let's first take her for a scan, figure out what is wrong, and then we will decide what has to be done. So I was being taken by my mother. She was pushing the wheelchair to the scanning area. And at one point, the wheelchair wouldn't move forward. It just got stuck. So we thought maybe there's a lever stuck somewhere. My mother tried very hard. Nothing is working. I couldn't get out of the chair. And then I just tried to bend down to see if I could release something which was stuck there. And lo and behold, the thing that had stopped the wheelchair from moving was a little piece of plastic, which was actually a cross you know, the kind of cross that is worn by Christians around their neck on a chain. Some of them have it on a rosary, some of them have it around their neck. It was that plastic metal finish. And I was dumbstruck. Just before we left the house, we had this lady of Christian faith saying, "Jesus Christ will save you." And there was this cross lying there, stopping the wheelchair from moving forward. So the first thing I did is, I couldn't actually manage it, but I somehow bent down, picked it up, and I held it in my hand, and I told my mother, "We're good to go, let's go." I held the cross in my hand the entire time, and I was wheeled into the scanning room. At the end of it, we were told that there is a very large cyst in the lower abdomen, which is so filled with fluid that it might hemorrhage any time, and it is very dangerous. Surgery can't be performed in the middle of the night, but first thing in the morning at 5 o'clock, I would be taken to the operation theatre. So they admitted me, and they said, "We'll keep you on an empty stomach and you know, ensure that your system is prepped for the surgery tomorrow." So obviously, it was going to be a longish night waiting for the next day. My mother was with me, and we decided. We had Swami's photograph in one hand, and I had this cross in the other, and we said, "We will just not sleep, but stay up either talking about Swami or singing." So most of the night, I think almost till 3 in the morning, we were singing bhajans, we were singing songs, and then we were talking to each other, still awestruck about that cross that we had found. Then I put it under my pillow and I drifted off to sleep for a bit. Around 4:30 or so, the nurse came to wake me up, and she said, "The surgeon will be here very soon. She'll do one final check before you're taken for the operation." I said, "Fine." And strangely enough, they had given me pain medication, but it hadn't really alleviated the pain the previous evening or the previous night. I suddenly felt lighter. I said, "Okay, maybe it's just that because I haven't eaten, possibly, you know, all the feelings gone a little numb." The surgeon came in and she did her, you know, the examination that they do. She had a very perplexed expression on her face. And they do this thing where, you know, they apply pressure in a certain angle. It can be extremely painful if there is actually something there which is preventing it. Right? So she did this repeatedly and she's very perplexed because, first of all, I wasn't wincing. There was no reaction from my end. And secondly, whatever it is that she was hoping to find, which would help her to locate what her starting point would be, wasn't happening either. And then she looked at me, looked at my mother, and she said, "I don't know what to tell you. It seems like the cyst isn't there anymore." So we just kept looking at her, wondering what she's talking about. And she said again, "No, I don't think the cyst is there. I don't think the surgery will be required. But I, just to be sure, I'll just get another scan done because I don't want to take any risks." So we said, "Fine." And strangely enough, I was able to get up on my own, stand up, and I actually walked for the scan. The previous night, I wasn't even able to bend down or sit up straight in the wheelchair, and now I was walking. So I walked to the scanning room. The radiologist on duty looked at me a little strangely, wondering why somebody perfectly healthy is coming for a scan. She did the scan and then said, "There is nothing there. Everything is absolutely fine. It's as normal as it can be." And by 7:30 or around 8 o'clock, we were back home. The enormity of it hit us when we got back. The words that the older lady had spoken to us, that Jesus Christ will save you, the cross, the surgery wasn't necessary. He had just taken us right past it. So this thing, going back to what it says, no religion has a separate God showering grace only on those who profess to abide by that faith. It's got such a deep meaning. The things that we feel divide us actually are the things that unite us. It is faith regardless of the name. It is faith regardless of the form. It is prayer in its highest form of purity. And that surrender is all that matters to be able to embrace what Bhagwan wants to give us. So this was one more such episode. The next one that comes to mind is, this is something probably many people would have experienced in their life in different ways. And it's something that we have often heard Swami speak about, which he says, my grace is like insurance. It will come to your aid in your time of need. So what I'm about to share now is something which was a very melodramatic depiction of this particular teaching. Swami, in all his love and compassion, had, in his own inimitable way, had arranged for my marriage. He had orchestrated the entire thing, spoken to us about it, well in advance of the time that it actually happened. So 2011 was when the wedding happened, but around 2008 itself, Swami had given the guidance about the direction this entire path would take. He had given us as a family many reiterations of how he would ensure that this happens with his blessing and so on. As we are all aware, 2011 April, Bhagwan decided to help us learn that our faith has to go beyond attachment to the physical form. So it was a sad time for us because we, you know, Swami had sort of brought everything together and we were all praying and hoping that he would be conducting the wedding in person, and then, April 24th happened. So acceptance was there that his blessing is there, so let's go ahead. And on the 2nd of September, the wedding took place in 2011. You know, when you are in a space of that the wedding ceremony and everything like that, there is just so many things going on that one, you know, there's rituals on one side and there's camaraderie on the other side. There is a festive atmosphere, generally a joyous occasion. And also there is a bit of some little bit of tensions are also there because everybody's hoping that all should go well. Elders in the family whose blessings are pouring in. It's generally an environment that brings people together. But that whole path to the wedding was filled with prayer after prayer after prayer, you know, where Swami, please be with us. Swami, guide this. Swami, make sure this happens. Swami, help us. Even with the, you know, invitation design, everything was like an offering to Bhagwan. So come that time when the actual, the rituals which dictate the next phase of life having started, right? So the whole part of the ceremonies where you are going around the Agni and the, you know, all the feras and everything. And then in our Tamilian tradition, right, we also have this little stone which represents the threshold of the household, where one has to step over it a couple of times. And then there are many we'll call it rituals, but it's something more than that, right? It signifies many a milestone to come in one's life. So when this particular aspect was happening and my husband and I were sitting and doing the entire offering into the fire, you know, all of that, there was obviously, everybody was looking at us as well as talking to each other. There was a lot of gaiety. Suddenly there was a sharp intake of breath, you know, like a collective sharp intake of breath where everybody seemed to gasp like that, you know, and like so many of them standing there and doing that, it will be audible. So neither of us really understood what was going on. The next thing I knew, I felt a sharp thud on the top of my head and something bounced off it and went in. It missed the fire and went and fell on the other side. I had no clue what had hit me. Literally, I had no clue what had hit me. Everything was in a blur. Everything was, my head was whirring and I did not really know what's going on, right? Nothing in life will prepare you for a moment like this during your wedding. So what had actually happened was, there was something which was supporting the backdrop, which was, the entire decoration which was behind us. And by mistake, a part of that support had been moved by somebody unwittingly. And this particular backdrop was completely made out of satin. This is satin sheets and satin ribbons and satin everything. And a sizable picture of Swami was the centerpiece of that backdrop, which had been suspended from quite a height, I'd say about 10 feet height. And what had happened when everybody suddenly gasped was that the whole backdrop had started veering forward. And it was ready to crash on top of us and into the fire. Imagine satin and fire, not a great combination. Everything would have actually gone up in flames. One of our friends, he's an athlete, no doubt, but also something that it caught his attention so quickly that this is heading for disaster, that he actually sprinted across the wedding hall, managed to hold up the frame and prevent it from falling. So no real damage was done to anybody else sitting there. Nothing actually fell down. So what is it that fell on my head? Swami's picture had come off its moorings and fallen on my head. And then the beauty of it is it didn't fall straight into the fire from there. It bounced a good 5 feet away and fell face upwards without a scratch on the frame, without a scratch on the picture. Yes, my head was hurting, but I think a little headache is any day preferable to the disaster that had been averted. What does one say? I mean, if this is not insurance, what is? We take it so lightly when somebody says, keep chanting Swami's name, or somebody says that, be connected to Bhagwan, keep saying his name. We think that we have to create a specific space and time to sit down and do Parayanam or, chant Vedam or sing Bhajan. No. Every single minute that we are not speaking something else to somebody should actually have his name on our lips. Even when there is speech happening, the mind should be connected with the thought of his name. Any name that gives us that peace of mind. Because you never know. You never know what the next step is going to bring. And that name is what is the insurance that is going to keep us in good stead. So these are a few experiences, a few little insights into the journey that has been and the kind of connection that I keep reflecting on. All that Swami has said, there have been so many instances in one's life that actually prove what each of these mean and what their implications are and how important it is to stay connected with those words. So with that sharing of experiences, I would like to conclude this offering with a little prayer to Bhagwan in the form of a song. It's a song in Kannada. The import of which it is, the words is beautiful. It says basically, Swami, don't let go of my hand. But I think whenever I sing it, I think of it the other way. Because God will never let go of us, right? That his express purpose is to hold us up and ensure that he has embraced us. Whenever I sing this song, my prayer is, Swami, please let me never forget you and let me never forget to hold your hand. And let me remember to hold on to you even when things are going right. I mean, we have perceptions of what is right and wrong. So when things look very happy and when things look as if they are proceeding on the right path, remind me even more to keep you in my thoughts, because that is when I'm truly in pain, I will automatically remember to turn my attention to you. So I will just render this song as an offering to Swami.
Nee kaiya bid பரதேசலஹூதை பர்த்திஷ பாபா நீ கைய பிடதேசலஹூதை பர்த்திஷ பாபா தனு மனதி அனுதினவோ நூத்தி பேனு தேவா தனு மனதி அனுதினவோ நூத்தி பேனு பாபா நீ கைய பிடதேசலஹூதை பர்த்திஷ பாபா மாகசாரினி பமக பதாரினி சபாமக சகச பகுநொந்தே பிரபுனா பகுநொந்தே பிரபுனா பகுநொந்தே பிரபு மானசதி பாதியுள் சிலுக்கி கருணதுணு வீக்ஷிசினி காவுடை பாபா கருணதுணு வீக்ஷிசினி காவுடை பாபா தனு மனதி அனுதினவு நமிப்பேனு பாபா தனு மனதி அனுதினவு நமிப்பேனு பாபா நீ கைய பிடதேசலஹூதை பர்த்திஷ பாபா மாகசாரினி பமக பதாரினி சபாமக சகச நின்னோடலு 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 பகுதினதி தப்பிசிதி பாபா தன்யலாடி இந்திகேனா நின்னு நோடி பக்த பிரியா சாயிநாதா வந்திப்பே பாபா தனு மனதி அனுதினவு நமிப்பேனு பாபா நீ கைய பிடதேசலஹூதை பர்த்திஷ பாபா நீ கைய பிடதேசலஹூதை பர்த்திஷ பாபா
ஜெய் சைராம்.